You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Out of the backfield, Tasker again. He's got loads of room. Luke Tasker gets a great block from Brandon Banks and is going to score. Oh, what a touchdown from Luke Tasker. Thompson pocket closes, picked off by Daly, huge interception for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. There's a deceptive handoff, Alex Green to the goal line, to the end zone, touchdown! Masoli, dancing once more, and off his back foot, Banks has it!
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, Eminem released a new album this week.
Yes.
I'm a pretty big fan of the guy. I know you said on Twitter that you haven't listened to him in a long time, but you did enjoy this recent album. It was essentially, he spent 45 minutes ripping his critics from his last album, which was a bit lackluster. What would you say if you had the opportunity to talk to our critics? How would you rip into the people that don't like us?
I just say, you know, you have the right to your opinion.
I'm not gonna
write a diss track or anything like. I used to be the biggest Eminem mark back in high school, and then I kind of fell out of it. But yeah, this album very, very good. Very impressed with it.
So are you telling me that if I unearth my old rhyme book and I put pen to paper, and come Grey Cup time, I got a vicious rap for you and I to spit in a booth for maybe all the critics and haters out there? You're telling me you won't do it with me?
No chance in hell, Josh. I am not a rapper. That would just be embarrassing. There's
no way. What if you sang the hook?
All right, I'll sing the hook. All right, I'll be Nate Dogg.
You'll be Nate Dogg. I'll spit the vicious rhymes, and we'll have an absolutely horrendous Podski Wee Wee.
But everyone loves us, Josh. Everyone loves us.
Well, I mean... Sure. If you know what, if you want to believe that, pal, I'm not gonna ruin your dreams.
PMA, buddy, positive mental attitude.
Oh, someone at work once told me, what was it? PVO, positive vibes only.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah, but come on, we don't live in the world of positivity. We live in a world of negativity. But this week we get to be super positive, Mike, because as the song says, Christmas came on Labor Day, as our Ticats pretty much walloped the arch rival Toronto Argonauts by a score of 42-28. Bit of a back and forth affair in this one, Mike. The Ticats went up 14 early, then they coughed up that lead, and they were actually down heading into the fourth quarter. 21 unanswered points later, and the Ticats emerged victorious, back at 500 at 5-5, and now within striking distance of those dastardly first place Ottawa Redblacks. It's the fifth straight Labor Day win for the good guys, Mike. You and your Wasp buddy that you were talking about on Twitter must have been pretty happy in this one, eh?
Me and Fred were very happy.
Oh, Fred! Because, what a lovely name.
I tried to murder him, but he got away. So he's a little upset with me, but that's okay. I loved watching this game. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say we blew them away because, like, you know, it was close until the fourth quarter. But, you know, once we got our footing in that fourth quarter, it was, it was a tough ride for those Toronto Argonauts. So... whenever the Ticats win on Labor Day, it's even if we're 0-8 or whatever record we're at, it always makes me happy to get a win against those disgusting Argonauts from Toronto.
Yeah, we hear it a lot. If you win Labor Day, the rest of the season doesn't matter. I don't entirely buy that. I think that came up during those lean years where they were winning 3, 4, 5 games a season. Then it was like, okay, at least we won Labor Day. We could hang our hats on that. But now the goals are much bigger, but to still get that win on Labor Day, it still feels really good in the belly. The main story from this, pal, I think, is the resiliency that this team showed. I mentioned it earlier. They were up 14-0 early. First two drives of the game for them, they score touchdowns. It's like, it looks like this is going to be a blowout of a game. But then we get a couple costly turnovers. The Argos fight their way back into this. They Argos put together a good drive to get down by one score in the second quarter. Mazzoli throws the pick. The Argos put in the end zone there, tie the game. Alex Green has a fumble when they're, I believe, near the 10-yard line, like looking to go in to maybe take a bigger lead. Sort of these things that we've seen kind of – this team has done these in the past. It's kind of unraveled them. But instead, what do we get in this? Argos tie it up at 14. End of the second half, end of the first half is coming. Brandon Banks makes a poor decision, although in his defense, in watching it live, I saw what he saw, and he had two blockers to two Argos players, and it looked like he could make a play. He had swung everyone over to the other side of the field, and there was no one on the other side, and then one of the Ticats players just missed a block. He gets tackled at the four, but the Ticats drive 106 yards with like 2.5 minutes left in the first half and score a touchdown, and it's like, all right, that's some momentum there. Like these little things that we've seen from this team, not just this week, but in the last 2 weeks, even against the Eskimos, where in the past these teams haven't been able to do this. And I think this football team is starting to do the things that great football teams do. And I'm not saying the Ticats are a great football team. They're 5-5 for a reason. But they're starting to show those signs of the team I think you and I, and a lot of Ticats fans, maybe even other fans from around the league, kind of saw in this team coming into this year. You know, like, it felt like this team could be one of those elite teams in this league if they could start playing this type of football. You know what I mean? Like, if they can – I hate to say get out of their own way, but, like, if they can – they get down in the game, and in the past, what have we seen, Mike? We've seen them blow it. We've seen them lose. Like, we saw that even earlier this year, those two games against Saskatchewan, resiliency – they got some resistance, and they weren't able to sort of, you know, circle the wagons and right the ship. That's not happening in these last two games. It didn't happen here. That gives me a good feeling. Like, that feels like this team is trending in the right direction. What do you think?
Oh, I'd have to totally agree with you. I mean, that Green fumble where it was a, you know, 900-yard return by the Toronto Argonauts for a touchdown, and then we were down by 7. But you look at the fourth quarter, Hamilton scored 18 points. Toronto scored 0. Zilch. No points in the fourth quarter for Toronto. So, yeah, they were down, and they chipped away at a little bit in the third. They got a field goal, but then they got two touchdowns in the fourth and a two-point conversion and another field goal. So, yeah, they were down, and this team, even in July, even like a month or two ago, probably wouldn't have been able to climb back and win this game. But they seem to have that knack now where they're not going to get down, they're not going to get – you know, upset, they're not going to hang their heads, they're just going to keep battling until they win the damn game, and that's exactly what they did in this Labor Day Classic.
All right, let's talk about all the things we loved about this game, because there is a lot to break out here. Mike, why don't you kickstart us with throwing it in my face once again how wrong I was to doubt you and your love of Alex Green.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to be too obnoxious about it, but Green, you know, might have had his best game that we've ever seen from him in a Ticats uniform. You know, 18 carries, 115 yards, a 6.4 yard average, a long of 19 yards, and two touchdowns. I said it before in past episodes, but this guy just has a knack for getting in the end zone. If he's within 10 yards, he's going to battle his way through defenders to get to that end zone. And we saw it here in this game as well. Alex Green has been playing phenomenal football. You know, I noticed that in the Banks touchdown pass where Mazzoli was, you know, in the pocket, bouncing around, you know, creating time for himself and for the play to develop, Green was blocking a defensive lineman of the Argonauts and doing a hell of a job. So this guy is running the ball well. He's catching the ball out of the backfield really well, and he's doing a good job blocking. So I can't say enough good things about Alex Green.
Yeah, he makes me look like an idiot every time he steps in the field. And I got to be honest here. I wasn't doubting Alex Green's abilities. When we discussed that weeks ago, what should they do at tailback position, I honestly thought it was schemes. And I thought that John White wasn't producing because the schemes weren't there and the opportunities weren't there. But what we've seen, and even June Jones, and I've said this before, admitted they got away from running the football. They have committed to running the football. And the one thing, you love the fact that when he's within 5-10 yards of the end zone, and he did it twice in this game, you're not stopping him. He bowled over, I believe it was Jermaine Gabriel, and then another Argo on the way to, I believe it was his second score. But the thing that I love about his game, and the thing that really makes me respect him, is it seems like he's getting hit in the backfield or very close to the line of scrimmage on almost every time he runs the ball, and yet he's still picking up 4, 5, 6, 7 yards, which should like what should be 2 yard carries are 6 yard carries for him.
And it's not like he's a huge dude either, right?
No,
it's not like he's a huge dude either. It's just pure. What's the word I'm looking for?
It's determination. It's
there you go.
It's just go.
Yeah. He just wants it more than the defenders want to tackle him.
Yep, it's a want to, and it's he keeps pumping his legs, and it's really impressive because, and this is not a knock on the offensive line, but if he was getting bigger holes, imagine what this guy could do. Like, he's doing this while he's not getting much, but it seems like every time he touches the ball, he's picking up 5, 6, 7 yards, and well, look at the numbers: 18 carries for 115 yards. That's a damn good average. You mentioned earlier, what was 6.4? I think you mentioned it earlier. And like that's like he's bowling over dudes and he's picking up yards that he shouldn't be getting. Like that's the sign to me of a good running back. And as much as I don't want to say this right now, he might be playing the best of any tailback in the CFL right now. Like I know he's Andrew Harris is good. James Wilder Jr., I know you're fond of talking about how overrated he is. He's still a good running back. Terrell Sutton's injured, but I like Terrell Sutton. Jeremiah Johnson's one of my favorite players. I'm not sure if anyone's playing the running back position right now at this exact moment better than Alex Green.
Yeah, he's just producing right now. And you know they kind of got away from the run a little bit. You know, those two Saskatchewan games and in the losses, their rushing attempts were down. But I'm looking at this game right now, the stats, rushing attempts, 26 rushing attempts. Could you imagine if we had 26 rushing attempts in the Ken Austin era? We would be absolutely blown away, but that's close to around the average that they've been running the ball in the last couple games, and I love to see that because it's paying dividends for this team.
Well, and doesn't that lead to the time of possession? Like, the Ticats have the, I believe, they're number one in time of possession in the CFL. They're either one or two. I'm pretty sure, certain they're number one. And it's, what did they win the time of possession battle by in this one? Like, over 10 minutes? Like, that's...
It's 25-20 for Toronto, 34-40 for Hamilton. So
just
close to 10 minutes.
Just under 10 minutes. That's a huge
and it was like that
advantage.
Against Edmonton too, right?
Yep. And that's what they're doing. And the reason they're doing that is because they're running the football. Let's talk about the last drive of the game where they got the ball with, I believe, a little over 2 minutes left, maybe 2.5 minutes. And everyone knows they're going to run the ball to run the clock out. And they ran it, I think, what, 6 or 7 times in a row. And the Argos just couldn't stop them. And it wasn't just Alex Green. They put Mercer Timmis in there. He was the one who got the run to seal the game. But it was mostly Alex Green picking up 6 yards, picking up 8 yards, picking up – like when everyone, including the defense, knows you're going to run the ball and you're still picking up first downs, that tells you how good they're playing and how good the scheme is right now with them running the football. It's a thing of beauty.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what did you like, Joshua?
What I like? Well, he gets a lot of flack from a lot of people. I'm going to talk about Jeremiah Mazzoli, man. I thought outside of the one interception, he had a whale of a game. 26 of 35 for 385 yards and 3 touchdowns. He finally has that touchdown interception ratio in the positive. He's 12 touchdowns to 11 interceptions. But I just thought he played outside of that one throw, really. I thought he played a marvelous game in this one.
Absolutely, he did. He also added... You know, he carried the ball 5 times for 22 yards, which is not huge numbers or anything, but you don't really want to see your quarterback running it a ton. But, you know, he does it when it's necessary. Jeremiah Mazzoli had one of his best games we've ever seen him in a Ticat uniform, I think. If you look at the completion percentage, I mean, 74.3, that's really, really, really good. Yeah, I just can't see how you can't be behind this guy right now. I mean, he's had a little bit ups and downs this season, you know. Interceptions have been rough. There's been a couple bad decisions in there. There was a one interception this game, but I love how he's playing right now, and I think it's just going to get better as we go further into the second half of the season.
I think so, too. And 3 touchdowns to 1 interception, that's a fine touchdown-interception ratio as far as I'm concerned. If he's 3-1, because that's what he was last year when he was a starter, 15 TDs, 4 picks. If that's what he is, like, yes, he threw a bunch of interceptions early. And yeah, you kind of are like, ugh. Like it frustrates you as a fan. My buddy sitting next to me screamed when he threw the interception that he threw in this one. But at the end of the day, if he goes 385, 75% completion percentage, 3 TDs to 1 pick, what do you really have to complain about?
Mm-hmm. And we have the running game along with the passing game, so he doesn't necessarily have to throw 7 touchdowns a game because Alex Green is just plowing it into the end zone every time he touches it. So if we have a nice balanced attack here, we can you know, relieve some pressure off of Mazzoli so he doesn't have to throw a million touchdown passes in a season.
Speaking of throwing, where do you want to go next? You want to talk Luke Tasker or you want to talk Brandon Banks? Because both those guys balled out in this one.
Let's start with Tasker because this guy, he just give him the ball. You know, he just makes plays. Another big catch and run, you know, 50, 60 yarder. I forget what it was. It doesn't matter. But, you know, and on that play, we can talk about Tasker, but we can also talk about Banks on the same play because he ran down the field. And once again, like you were talking about last week, Banks with the maximum effort running down the field, making the block so Tasker could score that touchdown. What'd you think about that, Josh?
I loved it. And I'm going to do something that we don't do often on this show. There's another guy who has not, because of how incredible it looked watching 150-pound Brandon Banks sprint down the sideline by Luke Tasker to get that block. Everyone's forgetting, and we're gonna lose the nickname here. Mike Jones had a very key block at the end of that play. He did a brilliant job blocking his man that allowed Tasker to dive into the end zone. If Jones does not get that block, Tasker might come up a little short. So Brandon Banks.
I was afraid he was going to get called for holding there.
When I'm watching it from the stands, it just looked like a brilliant block. When I saw it on replay, when I watched the game when I got home, there was a wee bit of holding, but I don't think it was enough to really throw a flag. But in this game, the ref were a little bit flag happy. We will talk about that in a second. But yeah, Luke Tasker with the great catch and run, Brandon Banks with a great block, which was just awesome, and then Mike Jones with the kind of seal block at the end there. That is the type of effort you want to see from your receiving core, from two guys who don't have the ball and the guy that has the ball. It was just a thing of beauty, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we want to talk about Banks, you know, catching the ball.
Oh, we got you. 9 for 135 and 2 touchdowns. Like, oh, and the second touchdown pass. Mazzoli, we could talk about that all day long. Doing the thing he does where he's buying time, looking for a play, throws it there. And Brandon Banks comes out of nowhere, snags it, dives into the end zone.
He took a big hit, too.
He did. He took a big hit on the touchdown pass in the first half. There was there was one where he caught it. He caught a pass. I believe it was short of a first down. He just lowered his shoulder and ran. Brandon Banks, 5'7", buck 55 if he's wearing soaking, drenched, rainy trench coat, lowered his shoulder and bulldozed himself for about an extra 4 or 5 yards to pick up the first down. It's like, what can this guy not do? Like, he's got the heart of a lion in him, or I guess we should say the heart of a tiger, which would make more sense. But, man, it's like, do you remember a couple – I think it was at the beginning of last year, he kind of hadn't been doing great in the return game, and I believe it was Adam who sent us a message to being like, hey, do you think that maybe Brandon Banks could be cut? And we were kind of like, you know what, honestly, with how he's in the return game and he doesn't really do anything on offense – he could be a candidate for a big contract guy that could be shown the door. And ever since then, he's been, if not the best receiver in the league, one of the top three. He's just been the transformation of this guy over the last year has and we say it all the time, has just been phenomenal. And in this game, he was full marks for everything he did.
Well, you got to give a lot of love to June Jones because Brandon Banks might not be a Tiger Cat if Ken Austin was still, you know, if Ken Austin didn't get relieved of his duties at the time that he did, because he was very hard-headed, very stubborn about Banks not getting on the field with the offense. So if June Jones doesn't come in, maybe Brandon Banks is on another team right now, and that would just be devastating.
Yeah, and what if he was putting up these numbers on another offense? We'd be going, why didn't our brilliant genius head of all things football see what Brandon Banks could do? Yeah, we do really owe it to June Jones for what he's done with transforming. And Banks obviously already had this in him, but Jones had the confidence.
He never got the opportunity, right?
Never got the opportunity. So Jones gave him the opportunity, and I believe it's been a year now that he's been a full-time receiver. I think he leads the league in receiving yards over that time, so what more can you ask for out of a guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He's just been a stud for this offense over the last year and a half.
Speaking of studs, let's talk some O-line, Mike. You want to give some praise to the Hoggies up front.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job this game. I think they've been, you know, we were worried about them. They lost a couple of really good veterans. They got one back, which we'll talk about later. But I thought Mazzoli had a ton of time back there. He helps himself with the way that he can scramble around in that pocket and extend the play a little bit. But overall, I thought the offensive line did a great job.
Honestly, dude, I wish that I could add to that, but I can't. You said it all. I thought that they played a whale of a game. There was pardon me, a little pressure sometimes that made Mazzoli kind of bounce around the pocket. One of those times it ended in interception. One of those times ended in a touchdown pass. Actually, two of those times that I can recall ended in a touchdown pass. So even when things broke down, he still found a way. I too also thought the offensive line played really well in this. And I think the last thing we kind of have to talk about on things we liked is the defense as a whole. The numbers here are spectacular. 220 total yards of offense the Argos had in this one. 166 through the air, 55 on the ground, 6 two and outs. And the Argos scored 28 points in this one, but 14 of those you can't really blame on the defense. One for sure, because that was the fumble recovery by Alden Darby, who scooped and scored, so that's not on the defense. And then one of the other scores came on a short field where, yeah, maybe the defense could have done a little more, maybe held them to a field goal, but I don't love blaming the defense for a touchdown scored after a turnover deep in their own territory. So, look, yes, they allowed it, but it's kind of, you kind of have that, right? So I thought that they played really well there. James Walter Jr., I touched on him a little bit earlier, kind of, you know, I guess to be kind of lame, he was James Comer Jr. in this one. Didn't really have much of an impact. 11 rushes for 47 yards, 3 catches for 42 yards. Yeah, you know, almost 100 yards of total offense, but wasn't really much of a factor in this. And he was the Argos' leading receiver with 42 yards. So that says something. And I went on Twitter after the game, and I'm gonna throw this to you and see what you think. No fly zone. The Denver Broncos of the last few years went with that nickname for their secondary. Ticats are the number one passing defense in the CFL. What do you think? No fly zone for the Ticats secondary?
That could work. That could work. But I just want to touch on Wilder.
Of course. Shocking.
So I guess it's not that easy to get average 15 yards a quarter, eh, Mr. Wilder? But, you know, I don't got anything against him personally, but I just think that he is underperformed greatly this season. I mean, he's barely over 500 yards rushing now, over half the season done. He's going to have a tough time getting to 1,000 yards rushing in this season, not even considering the receiving. So, yeah, we shut him down nicely. He had a couple of good plays. He had a screen pass that he got close to the end zone. He gained like 13, 14 yards. But other than that, he was shut down completely. So I just love seeing that.
We also got to talk about Mike Daly's interception, and I want to give you a story. So his family, his mother, his wife, sit near us at Tim Hortons Field, and in this game they were sitting like almost – they're sitting in the row in front of us and then a little bit to our left, and he gets the pick, and everyone's going crazy, and his wife's clapping and cheering and loving it. And then his mom was really happy that there was an interception. Then she sees the board and she's like, "Oh, that's mine!" As in talking about her son getting the interception. It was pretty adorable, and everyone's around them's giving him high fives because they know that's his family. And look, I think we were a little harsh on Mike Daly a couple weeks ago. I think he played a whale of a game in this one. He had a great pass knockdown early in the game. He read that interception play perfectly, jumped right in front of SJ Green, and that was kind of, look, we can talk about the fumble being a bit of a turning point. That was the legitimate turning point, because from then on it was all Ticats. That led to a touchdown score and a lead the team never gave up. So yes, we were harsh on Mike Daly when he performed poorly against the Bombers about a month back, but here we sit just after Labor Day and we're going to give him his props like we said we would if he played well. And I thought he played excellent in this one. So big ups to Mike Daly. And yeah, I just wanted to share that story because that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it's not like we were, you know, he had one bad play in that game and that we pointed that out. And we were more so annoyed with, you know, the fan excuses of, you know, oh, he had a baby. So it's not like Mike Daly came out and said, oh, I had a baby. You know, that's why I didn't perform well. We were more mad at like, oh, why are you making... like, those excuses don't make sense. So, I totally agree. Mike Daly, I've always been a big fan of his, and that interception was beautiful. He had a great game, and it's great to see.
All right, let's talk about the things we dislike. It's hard to talk about too much stuff. We've already talked about the turnovers. But, man, injuries took their toll on this one, and one in kind of a really big way, and this really sucks, Mike. So why don't you take it from here?
Yeah, obviously the Jalen Saunders injury, it looks like he's out for the season now, as I believe June Jones said today at a press conference. So that is really bad news. It's sad news. I feel bad for the kid because he was having such a great year. And, you know, for him to go down, our best receiver, arguably this season, it's really going to hurt this team. But hopefully we can move on and try to win some games for this guy, because, you know, he loves playing for the Tiger Cats, and he's going to be missed, but I think we'll be all right. I'm hoping we'll be all right, but it really is terrible news, though.
So we did this a week ago when Chris Williams got hurt, so I guess we have to kind of do it again. Do you think they look outside the organization for some – like, losing one receiver, it's like, okay, they can probably find in-house a way to fix that. Now they've lost two. What do you think? Do you think maybe a Bakari Grant, a Chad Owens, maybe a Mark Chapman who just got released by the Denver Broncos? Like, there are options out there. I personally believe that I think the Ticats are not going to go that route. I think Rashad Lawrence did not get on the roster this week. I think he will get on the roster. I think that's the move they'll make. What do you think? Do you think maybe they look outside the organization, or do you think they stick in-house and go with Lawrence?
Personally, I think they might stick in-house, like you said, with Lawrence. I think they're high on Lawrence. I think he's gotten in there a couple times this season. He's made a couple plays that he looks pretty decent. But with Williams and now Saunders injured, maybe they will go and pick up a guy like Bakari Grant. And don't get me wrong, like my first choice wasn't Bakari Grant. But I would not be, upset if they brought him back. I just think that there might be a couple guys such as, on the wish list, such as Terrell Sinkfield. I think he'd be perfect for this offense. Chad Owens, I think, would be good in this offense. You know, even Mark Chapman would be a good choice. But so, I would not be shocked if they went out and grabbed one receiver on the open market.
Is that the sound of backpedaling I hear?
A little bit. I got my bike. I'm backing up.
How were your mentions last week after your anti-Bakari Grant screed? Which, look, let's be honest. Mike, it's not like Mike said, screw Bakari Grant, I don't like him. You just thought that maybe, like you just said, other guys would be perfect. And me telling people to at you and tell you how big of a goofball you were for it. We're having fun, guys. Like, this is not serious. We're just having a good time. If you listen, just go and look at Mike and I interact with each other. We treat each other like garbage. You call me a bozo last couple of days. Like, it's just, it's all in fun, guys. We're just trying to have a good time. Sometimes we're trying to make you guys laugh. Don't take it too seriously. But Mike, what did your mentions look like last week?
Well, I think I'm the only Ticat fan that isn't like over the moon excited at the possibility of Bakari Grant coming in. But I understand the love. He was a good player for us. I thought he could have been, I don't think he reached his full potential as a Ticat, but he was a very good player, and I would not be upset if he came back to the team.
What we are upset, though, sticking with injuries, Delvin Bro went down in this one. And did you see the piece by Derek Taylor about how he's the scariest man in the CFL?
Yes. I thought that was awesome.
That was tremendous. Like, I knew the numbers were low. I did not realize how low they actually were. That just tells you how great a player Delvin Bro is.
Yeah, and that was, I was scared when he got injured, because of his injury past, his neck injury when he was in high school, I believe. The guy is courageous. The guy just keeps fighting and keeps fighting. Nothing seems to hold him down. So when he was down on the field, I was pretty damn concerned. But it sounds like it's not as bad as initially thought. That's what he tweeted anyways, that he's okay. And hopefully he'll be back in a Tiger Cats uniform sooner than later.
Yeah, it sounded like, or at least looked like, a possible concussion. Because if you watch the replay, it looked like he took a knee to the head. So they kept him out there. Josh Johnson filled in. I thought filled in pretty admirably. I am so happy with we've seen Josh Johnson now in the last two games come in for Bro due to injury, and he replaced Mariel Cooper. And he looked like He looked like the player. Yeah, no, I'm not farting into the microphone. I burp. Jesus Christ. Josh Johnson looks like the player that got an NFL contract because of his play with the BC Lions. He's this team's 6th DB. What a great luxury to have a guy who has all-star potential as your 6th defensive back. Came in, filled in for Bro. Like, he's obviously not Delvin Bro, but I thought he played really well. Bro was at practice today. They did a bit of a walkthrough practice because it's a short week, and I can't imagine they're going to install much different against the Argos, but it sounded like from what I read, that Bro was out there with the starting defense, so it looks like he's probably not going to miss any time. That is a sigh of relief because, as we mentioned with Derek Taylor, Delvin Bro is apparently the best cover corner in the CFL, so having him out there basically shuts off one quarter of the field, and that's a good thing for this defense. That's why this defense is so good. No fly zone, buddy. Hashtag no fly zone.
No fly zone. And usually it's the best receiver on the field that it's covering. So he's a huge asset to this team. And I love Josh Johnson being on this team. I mean, we think back a couple years ago when this secondary was just shambles, like, you know, players coming in and out every week. Now it's one of the strengths of this team, and I couldn't be happier about it. I mean, to have a guy like Josh Johnson, a really good player, he used to be a really good player and apparently still is. So to have him on the bench to come in when someone goes down is a huge thing for this defense.
Okay, so let's talk about the thing I didn't like in this game, and unfortunately it was the refereeing. And I'm not just going to – I'm going to mostly focus on some of the things that I didn't like about the calls that went against the Ticats. But I am going to talk about a call that went against the Argos that I absolutely did not get. But Don Unamba was I posted a GIF on Twitter. To me, it looked like a hold, and it wasn't called. It was right in front of the quarterback. It was on a play that the Argos picked up a first down on a scoring drive. I didn't like that call. There was a pass interference call on Delvin Bro. There was an illegal contact call on him that was, yes, he was, they were fighting back and forth. I don't know if I would have called that because it looked like the receiver initiated contact. I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about a great pass breakup where Bro jumps over his back, knocks the ball down. They called PI, and it was called PI by like the back judge that was like 30 yards away, so I don't really know what he saw. The missed pass interference call on Terrence Tolliver where the Ticats had to burn their one challenge. It looks worse because of the very next play, Alex Green fumbles, but so that makes it even worse that they used. But how did that not get called? There was a roughing the passer call on Jamal Westerman where his like leg hits the quarterback's leg.
Yeah.
To me, that's wishy-washy. And then there was one on the Argos. It was on their DB Washington. His first name escapes me at the moment. It was on Brandon Banks' first touchdown catch. He jumps up. He's in the air. Washington blasts Banks as Banks is in the air before his feet ever touch, and he gets called for unnecessary roughness. Isn't that just football? Isn't Banks in the air? He's trying to catch a touchdown pass, and the DB's trying to knock the ball out. I don't understand some of these calls. I don't understand these missed calls. I understand that in every game there's going to be some of these, but this was Al Bradbury's crew, probably notoriously the least liked refereeing crew in the CFL. I thought they had a pretty bad game in this one. Mike, what say you?
Yeah, it wasn't the best performance by the referees. You know, they're going to make mistakes, obviously, but some of them were pretty egregious. I just don't understand why there's so many penalties in the CFL compared to other leagues. You know, you watch like the NCAA, you watch the NFL, and it's just not that way. I just don't – are the refs flag happy? Like, I just – because you talk about that pass interference call where the ref threw the flag and he was like 30, 40 yards away. I mean, like, why? I just don't understand it. It's very frustrating. It's getting better. You know, there's not as many flags. It gets better as the season progresses, but it's just tough when there's, you know, 20 flags a game pretty much. I mean, there was 10 from the Ticats this game, 9 from the Argos, and that seems to me like a low amount. So that just needs to be fixed. And it's not all on the referees, obviously. The players got to stop getting penalties or doing penalties or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, not the best performance by the referees, but just the way it is, I guess, if you're a CFL fan.
Yeah. And for the Ticats, man, like they got like 4 penalties in the span of like 5 plays. Like it really bogs the game down. And I get it too. It's on the players as well. But some of these flags are a little wishy-washy. And if the Jamal Westerman roughing the passer call had happened on Jeremiah Mazzoli, I'd be sitting here saying like, look, it went for my team, so I'm happy, but I don't know, that was kind of weak sauce. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
We'll
talk about it if there's a penalty against us and we think it's bullcrap, then we'll mention it too. We're not just gonna be homers about it. So
no, you take it because you're like, oh yeah, it helps us, but at the same time you're kinda like, I don't think that's a penalty. Let's talk about Podsky Player of the Week. Before we get to our picks, I think we should acknowledge that 3 Tiger Cats were named CFL top performers for this last week's game. Brandon Banks was number 1. Jeremiah Mazzoli was number 2. Luke Tasker was number 3. Not too shabby, eh, Mike?
Not too shabby at all to grab those 3 positions. It's great, but I think they left out a player, don't you think, Josh?
I do think so. Let's get to our Podsky Player of the Week. But first, the fans' pick was overwhelming for one player. 60% who voted in our poll were at Podsky Wee Wee on Twitter. picked Brandon Banks as the player of the game. 17% went for Jeremiah Mazzoli. 14% for Luke Tasker. So interesting. Banks 1, Mazzoli 2, Tasker 3, just like the CFL's top performers. Shows that the fans of our show and their listeners are pretty smart people. 9% went with others. Most of them were for Alex Green. There was one for Delvin Bro, which I always love DB getting some love. But our pick for this week, Mike, drum roll please,
is Alex Green.
Yes, it is.
The guy, it just... Every week, he seems to get better and better. This week, he had 115 yards and 2 touchdowns, a 6.4-yard average. Alex Green is this week's Podsky Player of the Week.
Speaking of nicknames, I didn't coin the phrase, but I decided to give the no-fly zone name to the Ticats DBs. What do you think? Alex Green, the touchdown machine.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, I'll ride with that, I guess. I don't know about this no-fly zone. I mean, if the Broncos had it last year, I mean, you're just stealing it. How about I'll think of something.
If you know what? You come up with something, and here's what we'll do. You come up with one. I got no-fly zone. You come up with yours. We'll do a poll. Whoever the listeners pick, that's the one we'll ride with. Sound good?
Right. That sounds fair to me.
All right. So everyone who's listening to the show, later in this week, make sure you hit us up at PodsQB on Twitter. We are going to have a poll where we're going to officially name the Ticat secondary, give him a dope nickname. Pick no fly zone. That's a good one. All right, Ticat's player news. You hinted at it a little bit earlier when we were talking about the offensive line. Landon Rice is back. And if we'll recall, he was dealt to Montreal in the massive Johnny Manziel trade and was reportedly released from the Alouettes due to salary cap issues, which, man, you're a 3-8 football club and you have salary cap issues. That's not a good thing, but... Jeez, does this trade not just get worse and worse for Montreal?
Well, yeah. I mean, look. I mean, Manziel is gonna have a hard time getting on the field now with Pipkin playing, or as I call him, Tony Pumpkin. Tony Pumpkin playing really well. I mean, extraordinarily well for a rookie quarterback. I mean, yeah, they give up Landon Rice. They lose one of the pieces on the offensive line, but to get him back, I think is a big deal for the Ticats. Yeah, he wasn't necessarily one of the stars. He was playing that sixth offensive lineman slash tight end position that they were playing a lot of earlier in the season. They don't really do that as much now. There's a lot more spread offense going on. But to have him back as even like a depth player, I think, is huge for the Tiger Cats.
Were you surprised they brought him back?
Not really. I mean, if he's released, I think I read somewhere that June Jones said to him, "Don't worry, I think you might be back at some point." And maybe he didn't think he would be this quick, but as soon as he was released, they brought him back in. And yeah, I wasn't shocked that they decided to, you know, retread on him.
So speaking of bringing guys back, the practice rosters in the CFL were expanded this past week, and the Ticats brought back a number of guys. Some names we'll remember from training camp: international linebacker DJ May, who's with the Ticats in training camp; international wide receiver Shakir Ryan, who's with the team in training camp; international wide receiver Braylon Addison, who's with the Argos on their practice roster until about a couple of weeks ago; international offensive lineman Kevin Palmer, who's with Edmonton until August 13th, and actually played a few games with BC. I think he played 11 games with the Lions in 2016-2017. And they brought in another quarterback, Devontae Kincaid from Grambling State. So a couple of guys that we've heard of before. May was in, if you remember, was kind of in the mix for that same linebacking position that Don Unumba has taken and run with, and I can't see him giving that job up anytime soon. And Ryan was a guy that I recall from some of the training camp reports we got, people being really impressed with. So bringing a couple guys back, bringing another couple. Now they got some more wide receivers. Ryan and Addison are two wide receivers. But they brought another quarterback, which they haven't had on the practice roster for a while. So, you know, Ticats making some roster moves, bringing back some familiar faces. And maybe one of these guys could be – we say it all the time, right? Like when we talk about guys we don't know of, who knows? Maybe one of these guys will be a starter for this team one day.
Yeah, and maybe in the considering what's the injuries that the receiving core has gone through, maybe we'll see one of those receivers come in sooner than we expected and make an impact.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, Ryan was a burner, speed demon in camp and in the preseason. So maybe that's a guy that could be getting a look with Williams and Saunders, two speed guys out of the lineup.
Yeah, and we all know that June Jones loves his speed demon, so he would probably be a good fit.
So the Ticats, to make room for some of these guys, released two players, international wide receiver Cameron Eccles Looper and international defensive back Robert Porter Jr. Neither guy played with the team in any capacity. They were strictly practice roster guys, so we won't go into a long soliloquy about them. They just wanted to mention that they were released. So let's, Mike, talk about the big news from the league as a whole. Kyrie Saber, back to his old dirty tricks, took a disgusting headshot on BJ Cunningham that was flagged for unnecessary roughness. And lo and behold, a couple of days later, the CFL decides, you know what? We've had enough of this garbage. 2-game suspension for Hebert. When I saw the hit, I thought he might get fined. I did not expect a suspension, and I absolutely did not expect a 2-game suspension. What did you think when you saw this come down, Mike? Were you surprised as well?
I was a little bit surprised, but it's totally justified. I mean, this guy just doesn't learn his lesson. He's been headhunting for years and years, ever since he's been in the league, it seems. He just came off a 1-game suspension. And what does he do? He goes out and, you know, jumps head first at the receiver, you know, knocks him down. It's just, you know, this guy, he's trying to play old school football, but that's just not acceptable anymore. Okay. I like big hits as much as any other fan does, but to be headhunting like that, like he's known to have done his whole damn career, he just, it's so well deserved. And I wouldn't mind not seeing him play another game, because the guy is a threat to the people on the field, the people that are players that are just trying to make a living like him. And he's going out and hitting people like that. It's totally unnecessary, and he totally deserves what he gets.
Yeah, he's playing in 2018. He's trying to play football like he's playing in 1978. And you can get big hits in football. We get them all the time in the league without them being dirty. I think back whenever we talk about big hits in CFL, I go back, geez, it must have been 7-8 years now. Jamal Johnson on Buck Pierce was one of the cleanest hits I've ever seen, and it rocked Buck Pierce and nearly killed him. But it was perfect, would be legal in the game today. Wasn't a headshot, drove his shoulder into his midsection. Like, it was the textbook hit. That's what I think of when I think, guys, you can do the big hits and get the highlights without going for the head, and Hebert just refuses to not go for the head. Like, it's almost as if he's doing it on purpose.
It honestly feels that way. I mean, the way that he tackles, it's always so high. I get that he wants to be feared. I know he's a big hitter and all that stuff, but it's just, he's going beyond the rules. He's making a jackass out of himself, to be honest. He's a dirty, dirty player. And I kind of liked Hebert, like, back in the day. But now, at this point, I'm just total thumbs down on Hebert. I don't want him near. I don't want him on the field when the Ticats are playing. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, no, I liked him too. I was a fan, but this is not the way we play football anymore. And we as players have to adjust. We as fans had to adjust. And, yeah, I just don't want to see guys getting – I don't want to see another John Cornish situation, honestly, because how many great years were – like, and look, this, we're speaking as fans. How many great years were we robbed of John Cornish playing football because Kyrie Saber is a dirty son bitch? Like,
yeah, and you can be effective. I mean, look at all the great linebackers in this league that don't play like that, and they're very, very effective. You do not have to do that anymore. So just cut it out, man. Like, it just pisses me off, to be honest.
Alex Singleton, Larry Dean, Simone Lawrence, Bear Woods, Henoch Mwamba, like the list, Solomon Elamimian, Adam Bakehill, like the list goes on and on of guys who play tough. Larry Dean plays a tough game, and there's sometimes when I watch him hit guys and I was like, man, was that legal? But he doesn't get flagged for these things. He doesn't get fined. He doesn't get suspended. Like, it looks bone jarring and concussive and all that sorts of stuff, but it's perfectly legal. Play the game that way. Play the game like Adam Big Hill. Play the game like Solomon Elamimian. You don't have to play the game like Kyrie Saber does to get those highlight hits and to be effective as a middle linebacker in this league. You can play like some of those guys.
He's obviously just not good enough to change his game to play like that. I mean, he's just not good enough. He just has to take players out going at headshots. So it's disgusting, really.
Did you see, sticking with this for a little bit, did you see Nick Lewis's comments on Twitter about this is going to be odd because we're about to defend Henry Burris here, and that's not something we're known to do. But I guess Henry Burris made some comments on the panel when the suspension came down about how guys should get suspended longer if we're going to get this stuff out of the game. And Nick Lewis took exception to that, saying that because Burris made, you know, $400,000, $500,000 a year, that losing a couple game checks wasn't that bad. But for guys making $100,000, taking $8,000 out of their pockets is detrimental to their family. And while I understand what Lewis is trying to get across, well, what about the guys who get injured? What about John Cornish, who had money taken out of his pocket for the rest of his life because of a hit like this? Like, it feels like this is a very strange hill for Lewis to kind of die on. If you're going to defend, and I know we came out later and said, look, I'm not talking about the player. I'm just talking about larger suspensions in general. But you know what? If guys are going to take guys out and injure them and hurt their life possibly after football, I don't really – like, yeah, okay, it sucks that he has this – he has less money to help his family, but don't play like a dirtbag. Like, I
– yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, look, I don't want to sit here and say, like, his family should starve because he's a jerk on the field, but – clean up your act and this won't be a problem.
Yeah, and it would be a different situation if it was, you know, a guy that hasn't been suspended before, hasn't had the bad reputation that Kyrie Saber has. You know, maybe if there's a hit, like a receiver is lowering his helmet and, like, the defender, you know, he's just trying to make the tackle, but incidentally hits him with his helmet as well. You know, there's plays like that. But to defend a guy like Kyrie Saber is just – it's off point. It doesn't make any sense because this guy has had chance after chance after chance to clean up his act, and he just refuses to. So I feel no sympathy whatsoever for Kyrie Saber.
Couldn't have said any better myself, buddy. So let's move on. Let's talk Ticats game preview. Let's preview the upcoming game between the Ticats and the Argos. Before we get to that, I want to make mention we had a guest on a few weeks ago from CFL fans in Toronto, and they are having a watch party after the Argos Ticats game at BMO Field. They are doing a Banjo Bowl watch party at Three Brewers in Liberty City. So if you're heading to BMO to watch the Cats and the Argos, whether you're an Argos fan or a Ticats fan or just a fan of the CFL, you're looking for a place to watch the Banjo Bowl because it starts right after the Ticats game. Three Brewers is right there. Head to Liberty Village. Watch it with some fellow CFL fans. Have a good time. Thought I'd give them a little bit of a shout out. They're giving away as a door prize one of our t-shirts, Mike. The Podski Wee Wee shirts. Cool. If a Ticat fan shows up, they could get their own free Podski Wee Wee t-shirt. So if you are a listener to the show and you get the shirt, tweet us. We'll mention you on the show next week because anyone who's out there promoting our stuff, we're happy to promote them back. But let's talk about this game, Mike. Second half of the Labor Day back-to-back set. And the Ticats have a chance for the sweep. Hamilton enters this game, as we all know, 5-5. Last winners of their last two, while the Argos enter at 3-7. And this is kind of a make-or-break game for Toronto here. A win by the Ticats pretty much will sink the, you know, they call it the good ship Argonaut. We're calling it the bad ship Argonaut. Ticats would be three games up, but really four since they would have the tiebreaker with seven games left to play. It's the CFL, so as we all know, anything is possible. But, man, that would be an extremely difficult hill for the Argos to climb, being down four games with seven left. The Ticats win this game, man. They pretty much knock the Argos out and could keep pace or even catch the Ottawa Redblacks, pending the outcome of Ottawa's game against BC on Friday night. So if the Lions win on Friday and the Ticats win on Saturday, we got two teams at the top of the East Division tied at 6-5. The Redblacks currently hold the tiebreaker since they beat the Ticats back in July. But two teams coming down the strike. The Ticats would be in a tie for first place, essentially. So that would be – where were we a year ago? Think about where we could be right now. So let's hope we get this win. So since the Ticats won, again, Mike gets to tell us why the Ticats will come away victorious in this one. Michael, take it away.
Well, the reasons why they will win, Josh, is – The Tiger Cat offense is simply on fire right now. The run game's working. The pass game's working. They're going to keep it going against the Argonauts next week. The defense is starting to look like, you know, one of the best in the league, to be honest. I mean, the turnovers were not happening early in the season. They're starting to happen now. So that's another reason. You know, Mick BLT, he's a good young quarterback. It didn't look like it in the Labor Day Classic, but you know, he's pretty good, but he's not good enough to beat this team right now. And the last reason is James Wilder Jr. will be held in check again. The guy only had 40 some yards rushing. He had 40 some yards receiving. You know, that's not good enough for the Argonauts team that, you know, Wilder is a big part of that offense, especially with the young quarterback. But he's going to be held in check again, and the Tiger Cats will win once again, and they will climb to over 500, which we do not see very often in this team. And, you know, you talked about Ottawa. I'm going a little off base here, but you talked about Ottawa. They look like crap against the Montreal Alouettes last week. So we're right behind them, and I think we can catch them pretty quick if they play the way they did last week against Montreal.
Okay, so I don't want to call you out. I'm not calling you out for this, but you said something. This is something that's kind of bugged me about CFL commentary a little bit recently. McLeod Bethel-Thompson, you called him a young QB. And I guess in the CFL, like, his experience is in the
– he's 30,
30
right?
years old. Like, this happened with Trevor Harris, too. People – when Trevor Harris signed with Ottawa, it was like, oh, Trevor Harris is a quarterback of the future. It's like, Trevor Harris is 30 years old. He's a quarterback of now. Like, you're not going to hold on. Like, and look, and again, I'm not calling you up, Mike, because this is this is just a general – I just want to get this out there. Let's call him an inexperienced CFL quarterback. Not a young quarterback, because he's older than Jeremiah Mazzoli. But Jeremiah Mazzoli's been in the CFL for 6 years. McLeod Bethel-Thompson's been here for a year and a half. So let's
– He's a young CFL quarterback.
He's early
on in his CFL career.
Yes, but he's not he's not young.
He's not young.
I mean, you know, all things considered, yeah, 30 is young. Football, he's got some experience. He's not in the CFL. Okay.
Right. Just tell them why they're going to lose, jackass, all right? Let's get on.
Oh, is your wasp looking for the date? Is he trying to nudge you out the window? Okay, so look, just like last week, my reasons why the Ticats are going to lose this, they're kind of lame. I'm grasping at straws here. They're going for the sweep, the Labor Day win, and then the rematch win. And that's really difficult to do, no matter how good or bad teams are. I went back and looked at the numbers since 2005 was the last – was like the first time where these teams really started playing the back-to-backs on a somewhat frequent basis. Since then, the Ticats have swept once, been swept three times, and split three times. Now, the sweep came in 2015. And I think we remember 2015 at that time. The Ticats were unstoppable. Like, that was maybe the best Ticats team we've seen since the late 90s heyday. The three sweeps, the times they were swept, came in 06, 07, and 2012. And if we recall, those are probably three of the worst Ticats seasons. 2012 was, before last year, the only year since 09 that this team did make the playoffs. The splits came in 05, 09, and then in 2016. So 09, they were a 500 team. 2016, they were a 500 team. 2005, they were actually fairly terrible, but, you know, I think they won Labor Day that year and then lost in Toronto. So when the Ticats are really good, which was 2015, it's like the only year we can say that about them in the last like 20 years, they swept them. So if this is a really good Ticats team and not just this 500 squad that they always flirt with, maybe they do get the sweep. But more often than not, this is a split. And that's why it's like beating the same team back to back, that is difficult. And the number two reason for me, Mike, the Argos are a desperate team, and desperate teams do desperate things. The season for the Argos is basically on the line in this one, and I think they are going to hold nothing back. And we just saw today, we're recording this on a Wednesday night, which is odd for us. We usually record earlier in the week. But Mark Trestman's kind of walking back the whole Daron Carter's not going to play against the Ticats thing. And, I mean, they lose this one. They go to 3-8. Like I said, they're four games back of the Cats. What was the purpose of bringing Daron Carter in if your season's over anyway? We could see number 89 in the lineup for the Argos in this, because they have to do something to get that offense going. Like we mentioned it when talking about the game earlier, their leading receiver was James Wilder Jr., for crying out loud. You're not going to win many football games when your running back's your leading receiver, especially when your running back has under 50 yards receiving. Like the Argos offense and the receivers, even with a guy like SJ Green and Armani Edwards, who I like, isn't that good. You put Daron Carter out there who, even if he's mostly a decoy, teams got to respect that, right? So I don't know. I feel like the Argos are going to do some stuff in this that we wouldn't normally see them do. They might take some chances that we wouldn't normally see them take, and they might play a guy that they said they weren't going to play. And I don't know. It could be one of those ones where we look back and go, man, like they did this and that, and we didn't see it coming, and that's why they got the win. But I will admit that I do honestly think the Ticats are the better team of these two. I think we saw that on Labor Day. But I don't know. Maybe there's just always that little bit of pessimism in me that I'm just like, I don't want to say they're going to win until they win, you know?
Yeah, well, we've both been very confident this year heading into games that the Ticats would win, and it didn't turn out that way. So you just never know. It's so hard to predict. Yeah, exactly.
It's tough.
So it's just hard to predict in the CFL. Anything can happen, right?
Well, and this year in the CFL, like aside from it used to be, and I think we said on the show, Calgary's the best team by far, Montreal's the worst team, and there's everyone in the middle. Montreal's now in that middle group. Like they've kind of turned things around in the last couple of weeks with, what'd you call him, Tony Pumpkin?
Yeah.
Okay. Tony Pumpkin's gone in there, played pretty well. They've won a couple of games. They had the same amount of wins as the Argos. So, I don't know, man. The CFL, week in, week out, when you think you know what's going to happen, it's the old Roddy Piper thing, right? Like, once you think you have the answer, I change the question.
Yeah.
And that's sort of been
Roddy
the CFL.
Piper was kind of overrated. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
He's just annoying in his promos. Like, you listen to him? Brutal, man. It's not that good.
I'm just going to pretend you didn't say that, and we're just going to move on.
Okay.
God damn it. Oh, you hate Roddy Piper. My dad. Oh, you know what? That was Podsky Weedy for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw. Argos suck.
Argos suck.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.